Welcome to Kiki and Kibitz.
Welcome back, Pretty Corruptors. It's us, the Pretty Corrupt podcast brought to you by Kiki and Kibitz. The days are getting shorter and our depression is getting even longer. But we know that we're your favorite podcast to cry in the shower to. So today we are bringing you a dream cast of ladies from a bygone era that Los Angeles paved over and put up a parking lot. From silent scream queens to colorful women with moxie, Hollywood was built on the trails these ladies blazed. May we present the divine, the dramatic, the Real Housewives of Old Hollywood. I'm Stacey Noel Connor, here with my co-hosts, the reason restraining orders were invented, Jordan Ross Myers, and the fifth best thing to ever come out of St. Louis, Nate Safer.
All right, sixth best thing.
Okay, so I have Andy Cohen, Corey Bush, Gooey Buttercake, and Taylor Momsen.
Tina Turner.
Okay, well, I wasn't necessarily counting her because she was born in Tennessee, even though I know she was like raised in St. Louis. But
okay, then Ike Turner, whatever.
Oh.
Taylor Momsen was raised in Brooklyn in a loft by her musician father.
That's a different podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, guys. So we have a list of wonderful women here, and we're going to start going all the way back to the first lady of Hollywood herself, Mary Pickford. Yep. Girl with the golden curls, the biograph girl. For any of you guys, any of you people who don't know Hollywood very much, we're going to send you on a Wikipedia, Google, like blizzard of people, but you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I should know these people more. So we're going to start with Mary Pickford, and then we're going to go to Clara Bow, another silent screen film star. And then we also have the one who started in silence and then made her name in talkies, Joan Crawford. I mean, you have to have Joan Crawford. Hello. And then we've got the amazing Judy Garland. And then we're going to do the wonderful sister-sister team of Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine. They are the Kim and Kyle of old Hollywood. Right? Right, Jordan?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, y'all. So let's talk about these ladies and how they would be, like, we put them all together, like, if we put them all, I mean, honestly, Joan Crawford would try to eat them all up.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, she really, there's not even, like, it's a level above, like, LVP. Or
oh, yeah. LVP, like, LVP would cower in fear of Joan Crawford.
She would. She absolutely would.
Mary Pickford could hold her own, though. Mm. I think. Mary Pickford could hold her own.
They were in-laws. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yes, they were. Mm-hmm. Yes, they were.
Mary
Pickford. Mary Pickford was famously married to Douglas Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. And Joan Crawford was married to Douglas Fairbanks Jr., who is not Mary Pickford's son. It's Douglas Fairbanks' son from a different woman.
So Joan Crawford was married to Mary Pickford's stepson.
Correct.
Yes, but Joan Crawford was married to Douglas Fairbanks Jr. while Mary Pickford was married to Douglas Fairbanks.
So they were
at
like
the same
a
time.
Family.
So they were a sort of family. And Douglas Fairbanks Jr., who was married to Joan Crawford, stayed friendly with Mary Pickford long after she divorced his father.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very a tangled web.
He even said, it's been quoted that he feels that like Mary Pickford and his father regretted the fact that they never reconciled.
Yeah.
Basically they broke up because they worked all the time. And because if any of y'all don't know, like, they were the golden, they were the Bennifer of silent film era. Like, that's what they were. They were like, he was the action swashbuckling star of silent film. And she was the girl next door of silent film. But she was one of the founders of United Artists Pictures, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, gone by the wayside now, but for a good almost 80 years was a wonderful, motion picture distributor and studio. And it was the original independent studio or independent distributor, film distributor in Hollywood. And it was started by Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks, Charlie Chaplin, and one other who I cannot remember at the very moment. It's not on the top of my head. But she's like, there's the Mary Pickford Theater here in LA that's part of the Academy. Like, and then there's the motion. She's also started what is now the Motion Picture Television Fund for actors that basically helps old, poor, retired actors have a home to live in when they're destitute.
Is that the home in Woodland Hills?
That is the home in Woodland Hills.
Yeah.
I know. I used to work next door.
Yeah. But now it's, I mean, it's something even bigger now. And it's also helped a lot of actors during COVID. She's like a force to be reckoned with. She basically quit acting and she was just producing. She and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. had a torrid, hot, like steamy love affair and marriage. Yeah. And they should
Doug have... Fairbanks Sr., you mean?
Senior, sorry.
Yes.
It would be more interesting if it was.
It's possible it was Junior as well. Who can say?
Who can say? Yeah.
We actually wouldn't even have the idea of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills or this show or anything without Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks, because they basically invented Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
They built Beverly Hills used to be like a rural mountains, like farm fields and stuff. And they built the first movie star mansion there called Pickfair. And for when was that? Like the late teens.
Yeah.
Late teens, early 20s. Yeah.
Yeah. And from there, that would be, I guess, of their era, the Spelling Manor, mm-hmm. or in the context of this show, Villa Rosa. Yeah. It was the house on the hill that, like,
it was four stories and had 25 rooms with stables, servants' quarters, tennis courts, and a large guest wing, as well as garages. And this is in 1919.
Mm-hmm. Well, my favorite description of it was some journalist described Pickfair as a gathering place only slightly less important than the White House and so much more fun, which is how any home I would ever hoped. I mean, yeah, it's the manor. I mean, obviously the manor, Spelling Manor, is considerably larger, but at the time, huge.
These are the guests that, like, okay, so it says, like, dinners at Pickfair became legendary. The guests included Charlie Chaplin, who lived next door, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, Dorothy and Lillian Gish, Greta Garbo, playwright George Bernard Shaw, Albert Einstein, Helen Keller, H.G. Wells, Lord Mountbatten. If anybody's watching The Crown, hello. Well, I mean, you've got Mountbatten, and then you've got the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. You know, he used to be the king. Let's see who else. Amelia Earhart, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Joan Crawford, Noel Coward, FDR, Charles Lindbergh, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Gloria Swanson, like tons of people. Like this, yeah, it was the place to be. So
And she was, Mary Pickford was, I assume she was considered America's sweetheart, which given the time, she had to have been the first America's sweetheart. That title has been betrothed on many women since, but she had to have been the first, I imagine.
Yeah. She didn't even have a name. Like when I said that she's a biograph girl, like there was in her first films that she was in, they never listed in the credits, like the names of the actors. And it was this studio called Biograph. But they also they would put up artwork and publications for Biograph, and her face would be on there. So then people just knew her as Biograph girl.
She was like a stock footage icon.
Yeah. I know, yeah. Like, she is the girl with the golden curls. Like, it's crazy, so.
Well, another quote about her that I loved, and this also describes me, is that she was described as the virtuous but fiery girl next door, which I have been described as many times.
I believe it.
And she also, just getting back to her last week's episode about famous divorce settlements and whatnot. She divorced her first husband literally like a week before she married Douglas Fairbanks, very similar to Les Moonves, what we talked about last week. But her divorce from her first husband, Owen Moore, she had to pay out the divorce settlement. And it was a divorce settlement of $100,000, which in 1920 was a lot.
That was like $10 million.
Yeah, yeah. That was our $100 million to Amy Irving in 1980.
Yeah.
But this was the reverse. This was Mary Pickford was the star, so she had to pay him the divorce settlement, which is great.
There we go.
The last time Pickfair was listed, it sold for $18 million. This was years ago. It's probably worth now, I don't know, 30, 40 plus mil.
Well, it's gone now.
But the, the listing. Well, listing described it as the most famous home in America of the 1920s and the most important piece of Beverly Hills history of Beverly Hills real estate.
Yeah.
Isn't even the home, like, I know Pia Zadora bought the property when it was dilapidated and then she tore it down.
Yeah.
Isn't even the home that she built on that property, hasn't that also been torn down? Because the building that the house that Pia Zadora got in trouble for many reasons. One, that she tore down Pickfair, but also that she built a house that looked awful. It was just ugly as hell. So I think hasn't that house also been torn down?
It may have been. I'm looking now.
Yes. Somebody bought it in 2005, and they rebuilt the mansion to a Georgian-style manor.
It was last listed, of course, by Hilton and Highland.
Of course.
Some of our other resident subjects here for $60 million. So I don't know if it's sold, but it's one of those. It's fantastic. I'd love to get lost and maybe scale a fence.
I mean, it was 18 acres originally. Yeah. So who knows how big it is. I mean, I'm sure.
Now it's only two and a half.
That makes sense.
A lot over time, because it was fields back then. It's been, you know, subdivided into peasant mansions that are only half an acre.
I mean, they lived out in the countryside when they built Pickfair. They were bumpkins. It was like, what's going on there? Was it like, so... Yeah, this is what's so sad is that it was huge. It was a mock Tudor designed house, and like the Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford did some stuff to it, like made it even bigger into the 25 room, 4-story mansion that it became. But they like had like 18th century English and French period furniture. They had like, they had frescoes painted in there. Like, I could get that, like, the place might be dilapidated, but at the same time, you're just like, wait a minute, this is like way too important. I mean, Pia Zadora deserves all the crap she got for tearing it down. Cause I'm sure more than half the people listening to this are like, who the fuck is Pia Zadora? And is that one word or is that two words? And where does one word stop and where does the next one start? Yeah, exactly.
I used to think it was P initial Isadora. Pia Zadora, first class.
Yep. That's her. You should forget her name, people. Forget it, because she tore down Pickfair and she should be gone. All right, but let's talk about some other ladies, because we'll bring everybody back in. So we have Clara Bow, who basically was like, she was like the it girl of also, and she was a flapper. So she was like, so whereas like Mary Pickford started off in the teens, Clara Bow started off in the 20s. And so she was like one of those flapper girls. Her and Louise Brooks were like the flapper girls of the silent film era. And she was also a rappy New Yorker. Like, she was a big tomboy. She like said, like, she was going to be, she was athletic, apparently. She was going to be, like, she was like a runner. And she like set several like apparently records at her girls' school that she went to and stuff. But she had like a rough childhood. And she was always told that she was too fat and her face was too square. But like, she has these big old eyes that she just like worked all the time. And, I think she's just like one of those ones that like, you're just like, if people got to see like the Clara Bow that wasn't in front of the camera, do you know what I mean? It would just, that would be so awesome.
Well, that kind of, she'd be the perfect housewife then. Cause like you said, she came from a crappy childhood. She was insecure and felt fat. And then she moved here, reinvented herself and found fame and fortune, which is kind of Taylor, maybe, I don't know if she had Taylor Armstrong's duck lips, but that kind of is the story for a lot of Real Housewives.
Yeah.
She was like literally the first It girl, and because she was named that because she starred in a movie called It in 1927, which is why she was named the It girl. So she, just like Pickford was the America's first America sweetheart, like Claire Beau was literally the first It girl, mm-hmm. because it was literal.
I had read that Clara Bow was an inspiration for Betty Boop.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was.
She had the huge eyes and the short hair, yeah.
And the squared off jaw. It's like she had a very like square face and stuff. So, yep. And then a bob haircut just accentuates it. And apparently Clara Bow is blonde haired, but she dyed her hair dark to make it more dramatic looking, you know, and to accentuate her features more.
I do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Sir Patrick Stewart.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So I think it'd be fun, like, to see those two and also, like, yeah.
And we're talking Prohibition era in a lot of this, which adds even more fun to it. It's probably like an opium den in Pickfair. I mean, that's like the kind of stuff that went on.
Well, the unfortunate thing about most of the women on this list is that all of them either suffered from serious mental illnesses or drug and alcohol dependencies, which is not unusual. But like Clara Bow, I don't know anything specifically about drug or alcohol, but she was schizophrenic. She was like, she actually served time. She was in a mental institution for some time. Her mom tried to kill her, which was because her mom had mental issues and actually put a knife to her throat and tried to kill her. So she had some stories.
Yep. Yeah. Like basically
like the Kelly
she didn't
Dodd.
Have a childhood. Cause she was
no. Cause well, the story was her mom fell out of like the third story window when Clara Bow was a child. And basically her mom just had seizures after that because she had a massive head injury and attacked Clara Bow on several instances, like occasions. And Clara basically had to take care of her growing up because her dad left. And then her dad also did horrible things to her later. But yeah, it's most of these stories of that era are very tragic.
Okay, I'm trying to place a childhood story. I'm pretty sure she'd be Ramona Singer then. Yeah.
Yes, I think she would be Ramona Singer. Or yeah, I think she'd be Ramona Singer or Bethany Frankel.
Yes,
she'd be more
there
Bethany.
You go. You nailed it.
Because Bethany with her, you know, she had two fathers, you know, and but they were still effed up relationships. She didn't really talk to Frankel father. I don't even remember.
Yeah, she didn't.
But her relationship with her mother is just fraught. And she never felt like Clara Bow says that, like, she basically spent her childhood taking care of her mother. Like, she never had a childhood because she had to take care of either her epilepsy or when she was having, you know, mental breaks. And so it was like she never had a childhood. And Bethany Frankel said many times that she feels like she never had a childhood.
Yeah.
So, she's the
Bethany. And Clara was the first It girl, and Bethany was the first skinny girl.
Good point.
There are a lot of parallels.
Good point.
And I would say that Bethany, in a way, is the first It girl of Housewives because she was like the first one, because I mean, it was OC and then it was New York. And she was one who transcended Housewives.
She built a brand outside of the show.
And nobody would ever think that because she was hard-edged and she was scrappy and like she kind of was, you know, got in people's faces about stuff. So yeah, so I think it's perfect.
Hello there, beautiful people. This is Brianna, co-host of the Kiki and Kibitz Below Deck and 90 Day Fiancé podcasts. I've been talking to you guys lately about Beauty Society and how much I love their skincare products. They've truly made a visible difference in my skin. No lie. Perfect Form has made a very obvious reduction in the crepey skin on my neck, and the fake ID glycolic serum has significantly smoothed out dark spots and made my face look so much clearer. So today, I wanted to tell you about this cool new promotion. Beauty Society has a monthly beauty box subscription. Each box contains over $200 in full-size and travel-size products and beauty tools, like this cool facial brush I've been using lately. So awesome. When you use our code to sign up for the Beauty Box, you'll get the first one for 25% off, and shipping is free. Just go to beautysociety.com/Kiki and Kibitz. That's beautysociety.com/KIKIANDKIBBITZ. And don't forget to tell me what you think.
Oh my gosh, dude. All right, and then Joan Crawford.
Yes.
I would have loved to have seen Joan Crawford in a Pickfair opium den. Because see, her chill the F out, man. I mean, and she started her career in silent films. She's also originally from Texas. I don't know if I want to claim her, but she was born in San Antonio. She made the transition relatively easy. Her along with, oh good God, I know her name, but it's not there.
Juana Turner?
No, there's somebody else. They both made the transition pretty well.
Well, even Clara Bow didn't last long into the talkies, right. But she did make a few of them. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about Joan Crawford is that if you do any sort of research on her and look her up, nobody knows what year she was born. which is really funny, and that's the way I would love my bio to be read. But like literally, if you look up just Wikipedia or anything on Joan Crawford, she died in 1977, but her birth year is ? Which is hysterical.
I don't know if you guys have listened this far into this podcast, you must know who she is, but for the few who don't, she's famous to a lot of people as Mommy Dearest. Mm-hmm. I thought we should get that out of the way.
No wire hangers!
Yes. She they've never fully diagnosed her mental illness, but she adopted a lot of kids, Angelina style. Mm-hmm.
She had five adopted kids, but one of the five was reclaimed by the original parents. Mm-hmm. So she's only credited with having four kids. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know one was reclaimed. Oh my God.
Honestly, I don't know the circumstances of the other four, but knowing her Joan Crawford's background, I feel like all five of them should have been reclaimed by somebody.
Yeah. She was abusive. I think they never diagnosed fully what she had, but some have said like bipolar or a borderline. And
I bet she was borderline.
And she famously would deprive her. Oh God, there's a picture I have to show. She looks just like LVP in some of her glamour shots. But she beat her kid, famously the wire hanger. Mm-hmm. And I think she was a germaphobe and maybe an alcoholic.
But then some of her kids say that she was wonderful. The younger ones do. They're like, so it's weird, you know. That can't happen is that children in the same family can get treated differently and can have different experiences.
There was an age gap between them as
huge
well.
Huge age gap, yeah.
So that happens.
But she really went, I mean, she had a career that, because some of these women and a couple of others that we'll get to, they quit acting or they acted very sporadically later on in their lives, you know, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not. But Joan actively tried to work like her entire life. Like she never, and if also besides Mommy Dearest, maybe some of you guys have seen Ryan Murphy's feud.
Yes.
Joan Crawford and Bette Davis. I think that's a wonderful example too. Cause I think that does more justice to Joan Crawford though as well. It doesn't paint her necessarily like a wonderful light, but I think it puts into context what it was like for aging actresses. And these were women who were only like, let's be even kind to them, like 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. Like 40s and 50s in Hollywood, and they were considered really over the hill. I mean, you were considered over the hill if you were probably 25 at that time.
Yeah.
But they were still really trying to work it out, but how Hollywood also pitted them against each other. I think if you don't know who Joan Crawford is, definitely watch, I would say watch Feud before watching Mommy Dearest, because also Mommy Dearest was written by her daughter, Christina.
Tina.
who hates her, and apparently a lot of people don't like Christina though either. Like, the people have not, I've not heard good things about Christina. like I don't think even though she was adopted, the apple may not have fallen far from the tree.
Christopher too, the son, the oldest, is Christina and Christopher were the two that hated Joan, the two oldest kids.
Right.
And I love the, this is how much I love Joan. She actually explicitly listed in her will why she was not going to leave either of them any money. Her exact line was, it is my intention to make no provision herein for my son Christopher or my daughter Christina for reasons which are well known to them. Basically, it was they know what they did.
Yeah.
Perfect. I love her so much.
It's like, whose relationship would that be like?
Oh.
I don't even know, but it's just like her and her daughter. I don't know as much about her other kids. They haven't spoken out. Their stories were a little less salacious, the younger ones. But Christina's story is a book and is a famous movie that I love so much. If you've ever seen my Twitter, it's full of GIFs of liar angers.
I would almost say she was maybe like Vicki Gunvalson, like the way that she can like snap and go off and be verbally abusive about stuff that thinks, and it's, but it's only her way or the highway. And even though, like, you know, her kids don't hate her, you know, it is a complicated, you can see that
complicated
relationship with them, and that they feel that also they need to sometimes do what she says in order to like appease them. You know, I think like if like they would, unless there's like a huge falling, like she would write that in her will, like a la Joan Crawford, if something happened.
Yeah.
And her kids though still might think that she would allow them, like that she would still be getting money. Like, I don't expect anything from either one of my parents. I'm like, whatever. Like, your money's your money. If you want to give it all to your church, that's fine with me.
Wait, are you talking about yourself?
For a second, I was. You know, some people expect money from wills, you know, and money
when
people die, like you do. I don't.
I've learned my life's work.
It's like I've lived in LA for 20 years and been an actor. I'm used to disappointment. So it's okay. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But you, on the other hand, yes, you're working your entire life.
It stopped being their money the moment I was born. No. I'm going to be so disappointed. Don't worry.
You're going to be hugely disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and Joan Crawford, how many husbands did she have?
Oh, multiple.
She had at least three.
She had four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her last one was he the CEO of Pepsi?
He was, yes.
Alfred
Steele.
Yep.
And so she became, she was aging at the time, but because Pepsi, especially, I mean, now it's huge, but back then, she was like almost like a corporate first lady, and ad campaigns, an ambassador, like for the brand. And so that did give her some life, although, I think her lifestyle ended up bankrupting her husband shortly before he died.
Yeah, because she was living the lavish Jordan Ross Myers lifestyle and just living it up. But yeah. Well, and I guess she, and then Pepsi, once he died, Pepsi basically tried to ice her out. Mm-hmm. And then she told a story to Luella Parsons, and that became publicized. And then Pepsi basically put her on the board of directors.
Yeah.
But then after, like, I guess, like, it looks like 15 years or so, they finally were able to, like, force her out of the company. Because they're just like...
She was, like, a really sad, or, I don't know, complicated sense of... form of feminism, because she really made it on her own, but she would marry, she had to do the casting couch, all that stuff. But I mean, these board of directors and major, everyone feared her. She held her own and she fought to the end. I mean, she was working and she was a survivor.
I think you're right when it's like complicated feminism. It is because, yeah, she worked really hard, but then she was also scared. She was deathly scared of aging. Like, she did everything she could to like stay young, you know, and yeah. And then also, and she wanted more, you know, she wanted recognition. She didn't want to have to like be fighting so hard at that age to work. Yet at the same time, she would quickly throw not just Bette Davis, but any other actress under the bus, like very quickly. So that just, that kind of defeats the purpose too. Speaking of like throwing people under the bus and another Joan, okay, Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine. These are Irish twin sisters who fucking hate each other. Hate each other. Like this, I mean, this is like, if they, we joke, we can jokingly call them the Kim and Kyle of this, but at the same time, they are on a whole other level.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Olivia even went to Joan's funeral. And no. Olivia de Havilland just died this year at the age of 104.
And Joan lived to 96, and they hated it. They basically, you like you said, they were Irish twins. Joan was born a year later, and Olivia hated her from the moment Joan was born. So basically, they had a feud for 96 years. Mm-hmm. And they, yeah, they both were nominated for an Oscar in 1942 against each other. Joan won, and Olivia hated her for that. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, then basically they on and off spoke again over the years, but after 1975, they never spoke again. So from 1975 to 2013, they never spoke. So they had a silent feud for 38 years.
Joan disinherited, I think, one of her children for maintaining a relationship with Olivia, their aunt. Yeah. Something along those lines. So she stopped talking to them. Mm. So it was way more intense than Kim and Kyle Richards, because there's some kind of twisted love between the Richards that come back. These two sisters, De Havilland Fontaine, truly went to their graves hating each other.
Well, Kim and Kyle are what? Kim is 56, Kyle's 51, I believe.
Yeah, that's about right.
So imagine a few. So imagine Kim and Kyle not speaking now for another 40 years. And right. That's Olivia and Joan.
Yeah.
I mean, well, and if people don't know who Joan Fontaine and Olivia de Havilland are, Joan Fontaine was in the original movie version of Rebecca, which just got redone with, I forget her name, but it's okay. But Kristen Scott Thomas, but playing Mrs.
Oh, that's the book. Last night I dreamt I went to Manderley again.
What?
Rebecca.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So she was in Rebecca, and then she was also in Jane Eyre. She won the Academy Award for the movie Suspicion, which is another good one. But Olivia de Havilland is most famous for playing Melanie in Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
So that's the most famous one, basically.
Just picture that for a second. Olivia de Havilland was in Gone with the Wind, and she just died this year.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like,
and she wasn't even all that young in Gone with the Wind. It's not like she was like a child.
Yeah. She outlived like every single person, even the children who were in the movie. She was the sole survivor.
Yeah. And well, not anymore.
No, not anymore.
2020 gets the best of us.
And we haven't mentioned, like, just the, you know, like we have a few episodes ago with the David Foster episode, where we kind of have to do a logic pretzel with the years don't exactly match up. Not all of these women are exactly in the same time period. Some of them are a little bit off, but hopefully we can just include them all in the same. But
well, with this group, though, even though there were age gaps, they would have all at some point crossed paths.
Their peaks wouldn't have been at the same time.
Yeah, no, their peaks wouldn't have been competing at the same time. Yeah.
But what would have been an amazing plot line was that Olivia de Havilland dated Howard Hughes for almost a year.
Wow.
And that would have been an amazing plot line. Just throw in, if you could throw in Howard Hughes into anything, I mean, that's, yes.
How jealous was Joan Crawford of that? You know she was. And Joan was jealous, and Joan Fontaine. So we'd have like the two Joans being super jealous of her dating Howard Hughes. And maybe they're both trying to like mess up that relationship. That would be super fun. Oh my gosh.
And also Olivia, you mentioned Feud, Ryan Murphy's Feud. Olivia de Havilland's character is in it because she was good friends with Betty Davis. So Olivia Joan Fontaine and Joan Crawford did all know each other, mm-hmm. and Betty Davis. And the real Olivia de Havilland ended up suing Ryan Murphy for her portrayal in Feud. She didn't like it.
Of course she did.
Yeah.
And Olivia de Havilland, I believe, is a 180 from Melanie Hamilton in Gone with the Wind. Yeah. Like, she is not sweet and forgiving and all nice and everything. Like, that is not Olivia de Havilland. Like, Olivia de Havilland is a spitfire and is like, no.
Yeah.
That's why she, like, purposely outlived her sister for, like, another 7 years.
Out of spite. Oh,
completely out of spite.
She outlived her by 8 years out of spite.
Yeah.
Completely. Oh, my gosh. And then, okay, so one of the youngest that we have on this list and who unfortunately died the earliest is Judy Garland.
Mm-hmm. You know,
tragic Judy Garland. If we want to talk about tragedy, but then also like fun with drugs.
Unlike the other women here, Judy Garland had the most normal childhood, I imagine.
Somewhat. Right? Yeah.
No, I was not serious.
I mean,
actually, in comparison, maybe, but oh my God, Judy Garland's childhood was a mess.
Yeah. Do you want to like talk more about that?
Do I?
Yeah.
Well, she. Go ahead. You can.
Well, she was in vaudeville as a child with her two sisters. So, like, if you can imagine, like, a child going on a vaudeville circuit, like. Like this is the D team of theater. Like that's what we're talking about here. So they had that, and then she was signed to MGM, and they immediately were like putting her on barbiturates and amphetamines, like amphetamines to keep you up and keep you skinny because they told her like she was thin. They put caps on her teeth and these like plugs up her nose because they didn't like the way her nose looked. And it wasn't until I think her. Her makeup artist on Meet Me in St. Louis, that makeup artist was like, you don't need those. You're beautiful just the way you are. And so she kept using that makeup artist for as much as she could the rest of her career. But she was always, she didn't know her ass from her elbow. I do want to say this. I did love finding out that I did not know that her first husband, because she was married 4 times, her first husband is named David Rose.
Yes.
Yes. Ew, David. I wonder if she ever said that. Ew, David.
Well, I love that her diet mostly it was reported on her diet during Wizard of Oz, but it was most of her childhood because she was considered very fat by industry standards. Her diet during Wizard of Oz was chicken soup, black coffee, pills, and about 100 cigarettes a day. Which is basically is the diet that I wish I had because it sounds fun. And she and her Mickey Rooney was one of her best friends who would also be an amazing friend of the show. They were both fed with pills because they had to work crazy hours. It was before child labor laws on film sets even existed. They all referred to the amphetamines they were given every day as pep pills, which is exactly what I call my vitamins.
I just love how much she was like supposed to smoke and she was a singer. Like that was her, like, I mean, she was a great actress, but like the singing was her biggest thing. I also didn't realize that she was only 4'11", that she was that tiny.
Oh,
well, but part of the reason she was probably 4'11" is because they were feeding her with cigarettes and black coffee from the time she was 10 years old. It's the way that gymnasts are like their height is their height is stunted for a different reason, but you know, same thing. Like Yeah.
I'm really jealous of her Wizard of Oz diet.
You could try it, Jord. You could try it.
I'm sorry. I was wrong. She was married 5 times. 5 times.
Hmm.
Yeah. And her real name is Frances Ethel Gum.
But did she know she was married 5 times? Because it's hard to say. Hard to say.
That could be something, too. Somebody could get mad at her and kind of a la Danielle Staub.
Oh,
on New Jersey, like somebody, like if you want to get really mad at Dan, like piss Danielle off, you call her by her real name, which is, what is it again, Jordan? You
know, Beverly.
Beverly, yeah, you call her Beverly, and she just, oh my God, she sees red. So maybe because Judy Garland. Now I love Judy Garland, but somebody who is addicted to amphetamines and barbiturates is not going to be very stable. So I'm sure that she could act out at times on people. So if she acted out on you, you just go, Frances Ethel. She'd be like, ah!
But then she could snap back. Mary Pickford's real name was Gladys Louise Smith. So Judy could snap back at Mary and call her Gladys.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. All around, this is going to be fun.
All around, they all have different names. Because Joan Crawford was Lucille Fay LeSueur. And
I think Clara Bow's name really was Clara Bow.
I think it was actually. Yeah, Clara
Bow. That's an awesome name. Like, why would you change that?
Yeah. Well,
if your name's Gladys,
Joan Fontaine had to change hers. She is Joan, but she is Joan de Beauvoir de Havilland. So she had to change her last name.
Well, I can understand if you hate your sister, you want a different name. But Joan de Havilland is awesome.
Their mother favored Olivia and made Joan be the one to change it from de Havilland. Mm-hmm. She wanted Olivia to have their family name. Mm-hmm. So there was that extra layer. There was a clear favorite between them.
Yeah.
Something a lot of these women have, like you talked about Judy Garland and Joan Crawford and such. Like I said, these housewives, it makes me think of Taylor Armstrong. They changed their name. They changed their looks. They clawed their way from dysfunction and poverty to this this Hollywood glamour and wealth. But I mean, most of them died miserable on drugs. Oh God, they never found that happiness.
No, I mean, maybe if they'd been, you know, real housewives, they might have found it.
Taylor Armstrong, her third season Beverly Hills tagline was, I fought too hard for the zip code to go home now. Mm-hmm. And I think about Joan Crawford, who worked till the end, wouldn't like age or, you know.
That's true.
She would like clothe. How did she, was it face work? She did all kinds of things to appear younger on camera. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I don't know if she scoured her face with Ajax.
Her eyebrows were legendary. I would kill for those eyebrows.
Oh, yeah.
They were arches, like literal arches. It made no sense.
I think there are a lot of drag queens who base their look on Joan Crawford.
Oh, completely.
Eyebrow. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's quite a look, L-E-W-K. Yeah, she's, you know, I think you do, yeah. Those eyebrows, and plus also those eyebrows are iconic in two different eras. They're iconic for the 1920s and 30s, actually her look then, and then they're iconic in the 60s and 70s. Like they're very, because when she got older, unfortunately, they just looked even more comical. Like there was a time when they looked in the 40s, I would say they had the nice arch, but they looked right at the time. But then when she just got older, it was just like, no. They just like painted on. No. Oh, poor Joan.
What can you do?
I mean, just nothing. We just talk shit about her. We just talk ill of the dead. You know, that's what we're doing. We're talking ill of the dead.
This is our first cast where none of the women are still living.
Yeah.
Though Olivia almost made it. Olivia was so close.
In feud when Betty Davis gets the call that Joan Crawford has died, a reporter calls to get a quote from her. So Betty Davis says, my mother taught me never to speak speak ill of the dead, only good. Joan Crawford is dead, good. And she hung up the phone.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Well, you know what's funny though too? I don't know, maybe people will get at me, but also because maybe I'm just a literal person. People say like it's not good to speak ill of the dead. But I also go, well, it's not good to talk about people behind their backs either. And that's what you're doing during life. Like, you're going to bitch. It's not that you went around holding a whole bunch of crap in about a person usually. You vented it out to somebody and then it would get back to them. At least now, in a sense, yeah, they're dead. But depending on what you believe spiritually, like, you're kind of saying it to their face now. Like, that's just, I expect to die and for people to talk mad shit about me. I expect them to say wonderful things about me too, but also mad shit. And I don't care. Like, who cares?
Stacey, we talked about this. I will absolutely would talk shit about you after you die, except we both know I'm going to die first and I am going to haunt you. I've told you this many times. I'm going to haunt you. But I want you to speak ill of me while I'm still here.
Oh,
that's all
I
want. Yes, you do. And that's why I love you.
That's why you get you guys at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yep. No. And in between. So, yeah. But all these, that is funny. All these ladies are dead. And so they're kind of like Barbie dolls. So we can do even more manipulating with them.
This is getting dark.
It is getting dark.
The one last thing, just because getting back to Mary Pickford, I forgot to say, is that because she and Douglas Fairbanks were literally considered the king and queen of Hollywood, I read that people instinctively stood up when Mary Pickford walked into a room because they thought she was royalty.
Wow.
That amount of respect is incredible. Just people standing when you walk into a room and you're not like an actual royal.
Oh my gosh. Oh, and what's even better too is that she's Canadian.
She is. No.
Really?
Yep, she is Canadian. And I mean, she got American citizenship, but she is Canadian. Technically, she was a British subject for the first part of her life because Canada was still under the British flag till about 1920. But yeah.
Maybe that's how she got like all the Mountbatten and the.
Probably. Yep. And the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, she paved the way for Ryan Reynolds and Joshua Jackson.
That's true.
Two of my favorite Canadian actors, not just because I find them, you know, hot, but they're also married.
We wouldn't even have David Foster here.
That's true. I mean, yeah. Look, he owes her. David Foster owes Mary Pickford as well. Maybe we could add her.
His first of many wives.
Yeah, I was about to say we could add her to the cast too. Oh my goodness. All right, guys. Well, I can't wait to talk more about this cast when we do our head-to-head matchup, but we have one more cast to go before we start our head-to-head matchups. And we'll have that out next week. But yep. We're coming to the end. Anything else you guys want to add in before we wrap this up?
Is there some way that we could time warp this to young Judy Garland and slightly older Judy Garland just so we could have a young Liza Minnelli running around the cast?
Oh my gosh, that would be great.
Just imagine a child Liza Minnelli and just have her somewhere in the background.
She's just all eyes.
She would just like Clara Bow. She's 100. She's 100. She's like 50% eyes.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, it's perfect. It's perfect. All right, guys. Well, that's a wrap for today. You can follow Nate on Twitter at NathanWinston18 or on Instagram at NateDogGG818. Or you can follow me on, you know, you want to follow me. You can follow me on both Twitter and Instagram at Real Stacey Connor. That's StacyConner. And everybody knows how to follow good old Don Gunvalson and Lee Radswill.
Such a cohesive bunch.
Yep. Mm. Oh my goodness. Don breaking it out this past week. It's been insane. But yeah, and if you get a chance, go on and rate Kiki and Kibitz, 5 stars, especially for all the hard work that Brianna does every week, because she edits every single one of these podcasts and puts them up. Oh my gosh. And records them too. I mean, not this one. We record this one, but she's working her ass off. So 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And if you got some time, you know, give us a little love letter on there too in the reviews. We like this. And feel free to tweet at us anytime. And we will see you guys next Saturday. All right. Have a good weekend. Have a good week. Take care. Say bye, Jordan.
No wire hangers.
Wow.
I was waiting all episode to say it, but I felt like as we were winding up, it was my
well, I threatened.